Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start our program out today by taking a look at the health care that you and I receive and the changes that are coming our way in this country in health care, in finance, and delivering health care to you and to me and to everybody else. And our guest today, Dean Halverson, who is CEO of the Lead Research Group in Manitowoc, and Wayne Glowack, who is CEO of Glowack & Harris. It's a full-service advertising agency in Madison. Together are authors of Healthcare Tsunami, The Wave of Consumerism That Will Change U.S. Business. And I've had a chance to read their book, and if they're right, and you know what? I think they talked me into it as I read the book. I think they've got some pretty strong ideas and some interesting ideas about where healthcare is heading. And certainly as we move along and talk with them today, you're most welcome to join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Dean Halverson, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you, sir.
And Wayne Glowack, good to see you.
You too, Larry.
Thanks so much. How did you guys get involved in thinking so much about healthcare? Dean, you start.
Well, it probably is a good chunk of my fault, actually. We've been doing research on the healthcare industry since 1983, starting out working with providers, doing things like patient satisfaction surveys, and kind of got swept along in the whole kind of initial marketing boom that hit that industry in the mid part of the 80s, and really have been working in it ever since. And as we built our base of experience, we moved into insurance, we moved into medical product manufacturing, we do work with business coalitions, so we really kind of understand that landscape and that space. Our second strong segment is financial services, and that's not only the banks and the credit unions, but also the companies that provide service for them, companies like Fiserv in Milwaukee that does backroom and software services, and Metavante, and all of a sudden, about 5 years ago, we started seeing our two primary industries starting to intermingle. Mm-hmm. The banks had gotten into healthcare primarily in through insurance, mm-hmm. and being allowed to offer insurance and brokerage, and that was kind of changing the way things were shaping up. And we started seeing the providers coming to understand that there's going to be a different set of rules. And then the employers were reaching a frustration level that they couldn't afford the coverage anymore. And they were passing more of that burden on to us as employees and individuals. And all of this coming together with some other trends that we identified really indicated a big wave of change on the horizon.
Yeah, you bet. And Wayne, your company has been actively involved in marketing and so forth for health care people, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, right. And kind of the synergy of Dean and I working together, working with providers across the area and doing research, we saw some trends emerging, and it's almost a perfect storm coming together requiring change. I mean, on the surface of it, by 2020, most of us will not be able to afford health care at this current rate because health care costs will exceed personal income. So we realized there was a breaking point, and we started noticing a trend in providers and the rest of the industry, as Dean said, moving toward consumerism and switching the healthcare power into the hands of the consumer. And the premise of the book is we believe that's not the only answer, but we believe it's a step forward in fixing some of the challenges we have with our healthcare system.
Yeah, a lot to talk about there. You know, I was interested, though, as how you put it in your book about insurers and providers. As you say somewhere in the book early on, I think relatively early on, you say that they're really not paid to make us healthy. They're paid to take care of us when we're sick, and so the more people who are sick, the more money they make.
Yeah, exactly. And the concept of wellness really hasn't taken effect. There was some incentives back in the 80s with HMOs and providers trying to help people understand the concept of wellness. But now that when consumers are more responsible to spend their own money, we're finding a greater trend of consumers actually understanding that, wow, if I stay healthy, I'm going to be able to keep more of my money, and that's a good thing. It's kind of a carrot and a stick, and it looks like the carrot is starting to work.
The carrot's starting to work. And we're seeing some real changes, as you say, in HSAs, health savings accounts, is an example, I believe, Dean, of a change that you're seeing.
Well, you know, one of the things that's caused the problem in this industry is that we've had what is technically called a third-party provider system, in the sense that for many of us, for many years, our answer to healthcare was we take our plastic card, we go to the doctor does what they need to do, and we go home. And we've never had any real reason to pay attention to what is being done, why it's being done, and how much it costs. And one of my partners coined an analogy we use in the book, and I think it's a great, simple example, and that's, you know, our employer's been footing this bill for a long, long time. What if your employer bought your groceries?
Yeah.
You know, and the comment is, you know, how many hot dogs and macaroni and cheese boxes would we see in that cart versus steak and shrimp? And, you know, that's kind of what we've had. So now we've got an environment with those costs shifting to the consumer themselves. They're starting to ask those questions. Why are you doing this test? How much does it cost? What are the benefits of it? And by doing that, we're starting to put a true consumerism spin on the last industry to not have one.
You know, that is really interesting. As you point out, the healthcare industry is totally the opposite of almost any other business, isn't it, Wayne?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a big part of the issue, that the people getting the services aren't the one paying for it. And when you don't pay for something, you don't value it. I mean, for example, my wife and I were waiting for a doctor's appointment. He was a half hour late. In fact, he may not even make the appointment. And it didn't affect us out of our pocket. But I tell you, if I would have had to go to that front desk and write a check for $100 or whatever it was, mm-hmm. I would have responded a lot differently. So even though we're in this, I still respond the same way. And I think when people actually have to pay for it, there's going to be greater value and significant change.
Well, we are seeing some change already. And as you talked about it, you talked about some good things and some bad things. Pharmaceuticals was one area I found kind of interesting, in that medications and so forth, under a newer kind of system that's more consumer-oriented, it's possible that pharmaceuticals companies may not be spending the kind of money on research and so forth that they have been now. Is that correct, or am I misreading?
Well, what we've got, and all of this creates a real interesting kind of catch-22. The system that we've developed is considered, you know, one of the highest quality healthcare systems in the world. We've generated incredible new technologies and tools that have extended our life expectancy. But one of the problems of extending our life expectancy is dealing with the cost of that extension. And a lot of people think that once I get to Medicare, I'm fine, I'm covered. But some recent figures came out that say if you live to your life expectancy right now, in our case, which is about 78 years mm-hmm. of age, your out-of-pocket expenses beyond Medicare from the time you retire till the time you pass away will be $100,000. If you live to be 90 years of age, that projection is $340,000. So what they're saying now is if you have a husband and wife that live well into their 80s, their out-of-pocket expense beyond Medicare is likely to be over $500,000. And what they're saying is most of the baby boomers who are now going to move through that cycle don't have those kind of resources set aside. And that's actually accelerating this kind of train wreck that we're moving through, or that tsunami that's going to happen if we don't find some way to change this pattern.
And what's going to happen? What's the tsunami that you see coming here? What's the leading thing that's happening here?
Well, you know, if you go back to the basics, a tsunami is something that kind of builds under the surface. There's a lot of pressure building up, and we don't always see that pressure, and I think we as consumers really haven't seen it. Our employers have seen it. They've reached a tipping point, but what's happening now is as that cost shifting goes on and all of these other things go on, the fact that government is the largest single client of healthcare, but yet they also are the ones that set the regulations, and the three of the top five lobbying organizations in the country deal with healthcare or health insurance. So we've got all of this pressure building up. Plus, we're heading on a road, as Wayne said, that by 2020, if this doesn't change, all of our income would go to healthcare, which can't happen.
No.
Between now and 2015, Medicare expenditures on healthcare were more than double. So this pressure is building, and it's going to burst. And that wave is going to be what happens next. Now, we believe that as this consumerism movement takes place, people are going to do what they did in every other industry in this country, is they put pressure on the people that make the product to make it better, to make it smarter, to make it more efficient, and to make it cost less. And we've really spent 40 years setting up a system that didn't do that. And as you noted, a system that really is compensated for the wrong thing. Now, that's not going to change in any short term, but those are the types of things that this wave has to impact in order for us to benefit.
Well, we have lots of people to visit with you, so let's go to the phones here and to Ruth in Madison. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I would like to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is the for-profit HMOs. Back in 1978, I joined a cooperative HMO. I've been a member ever since. And it cost more back then to join because they had to get us healthy first, and then the price went down. Well, the next thing you know, we've got a bunch of for-profit HMOs hopping in on the scene, and all of a sudden the price of everything is going up. And the only lucky thing we have in Wisconsin is that we do have the cooperative HMOs that can compete with the for-profit HMOs. You know, I think that when you're, you know, the businesses have to look out for their shareholders, you know, first. That's the foremost, is to return to the shareholders. And so once they value the shareholders more than they value their patients in a for-profit situation, I think that sets up a terrible dynamic.
Well, thanks for calling. Let's get some comments. We'll start out with Dean. Dean, you want to comment?
Well, I think what she's saying, in for the most part, is true. Unfortunately, it's not just though the HMOs that have experienced the cost increases. It has been a general increase across categories to a point where, you know, the employers can't afford it anymore. And that's why we're seeing the high deductible health plan growth. If you talk to any major insurance company, they will tell you their fastest growing products are the high deductible health plans. Those are usually plans that have a $2,500 or a $5,000 deductible and have a health savings account or a health reimbursement account. And the reason those are the hottest policies, interesting enough, is not because the insurance companies are marketing them. Matter of fact, they're not spending a nickel marketing them because they're literally taking dollars off their own plate. But it's happening because it's what the market can bear. And we've reached a point where the market can't bear these things.
You know, the other thing, too, is that there's a lot of us are to blame. And I think we also need to look in the mirror as a society. Roughly 70% of our healthcare issues are because of the choices we make as human beings. So I think we need to be careful who we're blaming, because we need to bear some of that blame, too, with unhealthy habits are causing significant healthcare issues in our country. Just look at the onset of diabetes is a catastrophic level now. And that's a choice that we're making. And what we're hoping is that when we are more responsible as consumers and we know that our choices will impact us financially as well as through our health care, that we will be smarter. I know it's a little Pollyannish, but we've seen some initial evidence that people are being smarter. They're being a little bit healthier when the money is coming out of their own pocket.
Oh, where did you have what's the evidence for that? Has there been some research on that?
Yeah, there's national studies, and we cite some of those in the book that are basically assessing about 70% of our costs to lifestyle choices. And it's obesity, and it's diet, and it's lack of exercise. And, I mean, it's all the things we're hearing about in the press. And, you know, the challenge has always been that we as the consumer have not had much skin on the table in this game. Our employer has, and they've tried everything. We've seen in the research we do with employers, they've reached this frustration point where they just can't deal with it anymore. They're basically saying, here's a block of money. Somebody help me spend this in a way that I can live with, and that my employees aren't going to be beaten down the door saying, what kind of network did you put me in? And coming back around to the caller's question, there are some calls for reform in the insurance side of the industry. We had a provider who reviewed the book for us before we went to press, and his question was, how much of the dollar goes to the insurance company before it gets into the care system? And we're showing that to be, depending upon the insurer, somewhere between 25 and 35 cents of the dollar comes right off the top. And there's people calling for change in that and saying, are they really adding value to the process?
Yeah, are they? Okay. Dean Halverson and Wayne Glowack are authors of the book Healthcare Tsunami. It's published by Wave Strategy, LLC. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dean Halverson and Wayne Glowack about their book Healthcare Tsunami. Glad to have them with us. Give us a call if you have a question at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Rick in La Crosse next. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me on. I can tell your guests are pretty unabashed capitalists and with a Calvinist tinge. But let me put it to you this way. I'm not an American. And... I've lived in other parts of the world where healthcare is subsidized publicly. And I also worked for Humana Incorporated, the big HMO.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you that when I worked for them, they were taking over the Medicare replacement contract, which for Medicare and also TRICARE for the military. Their overhead went from 3% under Medicare and TRICARE to over 20% under the private regime.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my first argument against privatized health care. My second argument is, historically, I'm a student of American history, the linking of one's health care to one's employment was actually a really mean-spirited little trick pulled by the Taft-Hartley Act in 1948 due to labor unrest after World War II in the United States. Basically, if you got out of line and you lost your job, you lost your health care along with your job. So it was a really mean-spirited thing to make employers responsible for caring for the health care of the employees. So let's look at it historically. This country needs to go to a universal health care system and get on the planet with the rest of the civilized countries of the world. Health care is not a privilege, it's a right. And it's like you're saying, oh, all fat people are fat because it's their own fault.
Well, I don't think anybody said that, but let's get some comments, Rick, from our guests here, Dean Halverson.
Well, first of all, I agree with the 2 points that the caller made. It is true that insurance administrative costs are one of the fastest rising costs in healthcare right now. And again, one of the reasons that there's a call by some groups to review the role that insurance plays in the delivery system. Don't argue that point at all. Also, don't argue the point that the reason we have insurance tied to our employers is because of that historical linkage that he cited. Now, I have a little bit different perspective on it because as we did some of the research, it was actually a way for employers to compete for employees by offering health as a benefit when they couldn't offer wage increases because of restrictions that went on after the war due to labor shortages. So one way or another, yeah, he's actually right in both cases. I do not agree necessarily at this point in time with the statement that healthcare is a right. Certainly we do not have providers that turn away anyone who has true need. All of our providers, for the most part, will meet those needs. It's not always a pleasant picture trying to settle up for things afterwards. But, if we as a society decide that healthcare is a right, that will change the way we deliver the system. Currently, that's not the case. And until that changes, I think some of the things are not likely to happen. Wayne and I have tried, as we researched the book, to find examples of a true national delivery system that really is off the charts. And we haven't been able to find one that is the perfect picture. Most of them have two-tiered systems where people who can pay on their own do certain things and people who can't do others. And that's the one thing you don't see in our society under this current delivery system.
Yeah. Wayne, a comment from you?
I think Dean nailed it. You know, it is interesting. The government is the largest consumer of health care. And I think there's also a disincentive at this point, the way our model is, because providers get payment for procedures. And we're seeing some changes in that. For example, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services recently did a study. They've started in April 2005. And one of the 10 participants was Marshfield Clinic.
Marshfield Clinic. That's an interesting story. Talk about that.
Yeah, it is. The concept was, let's reimburse providers for helping people stay healthy. And in the instance of Marshfield Clinic, they were able to reduce the amount by 13% of their patients that were hospitalized for diabetes. And because of that, they saved the government literally tens of millions of dollars, and the government in return provided some of that money back to Marshfield Clinic and the University of Michigan, the other center that was involved in the program. They saved roughly $9.5 million with this program, and bonuses were paid of $7.3 million. So agreed, I'm an unabashed capitalist, and I think there are ways for our current capitalistic system to help our problem. I guess I'm not really prepared to argue universal health care versus not, or right versus not. We're just observing the current system we have, and we see some real positive benefits of consumerism.
And I thank you, Dick, Rick. I want to give others a chance to get involved here, so I appreciate your call. And Roger in Fitchburg will give you a chance next. Roger, hi.
Well, I very much agree with a previous caller. I think that and know that people in need of medical care are often turned away, contrary to what you said. We're not considered to be one of the finest healthcare systems in the world. The World Health Organization says that we're in 37th place. This consumerism tsunami is a terrible thing. I think government will still have to, it will still be expected to pay for a lot of it. The consumers are not capable of deciding what is best in all the complexity, especially with this hard sell that's now coming about. Blue Cross, after it was able to privatize, is now hitting on people for their Medicare dollars. I get something in the mail almost every day from this Blue Cross Anthem thing. And I know that it's very clear that you're profiting from this yourself. We need single-payer health insurance system, the sort that the previous caller advocated.
Okay. Well, let's get another comment back from Dean Halverson.
Well, actually, I agree with you. A single-payer health insurance system is the right answer to this. That differs, and one of the problems that we get into in these discussions is there's a distinct difference between national health care, as was originally discussed under the original Hillary Clinton era, and what they're talking about now in universal coverage. And this caller makes a very good point. Universal coverage is a good thing, and that's basically creating a large pool that includes everyone. Because what happens with especially the privatized insurance industry is that their goal is to try and get as many healthy people on their plan as possible, because they make more money when they do that. And the movement that we're doing with consumerism is creating a polarity in the sense that the people that are jumping on the high deductible health plans and health savings accounts right now, at least, are primarily young, healthy people or young, healthy, and wealthy people.
Yeah.
And what happens is we're pulling them out of the insurance pool. And the people that are left that aren't on those plans are becoming less and less healthy as a pool. So the caller is totally right. If we don't go to some type of a universal pooling where the insurers cannot decline your coverage because of a pre-existing condition, which is called guaranteed issue, I agree. We're going to accelerate the train wreck rather than fix it. So, we do have to create that large pool of risk that everyone shares in, that everyone benefits from equally.
Well, I think we got to get rid of the insurers, the private insurers. It seems to me that you're just proposing that government provide more of the money, but leaving it up to consumers who are a prey to hard sell medical sales, which we see too much of, far too much of already, that be allowed to run rampant. And I think that the most successful systems, though they've had to give way to intense free market, quote unquote, forces were working best when there was private enterprise, quote unquote, was taken out of the health insurance process.
Wayne, a comment?
No, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of opinion. I don't disagree that pooling is one of the answers that we need to reach to fix this. Who manages the pool? I'm not quite sure at this point. All I can say is, we don't have a lot of good evidence of government taking over an industry and making it more efficient, and that's the main problem I have with some of this. I think there are ways to create an ideal system. First of all, in opposition to what the caller indicated, I'm not for the government paying for this, because even handling money, the government isn't the most efficient at. I think we need to find a way to level the playing field, and it's leveling it both for business and for the individual. And also going back to an earlier comment, there really is no reason anymore to link our healthcare coverage to our employer. That was in an era where you stayed at an employer for 40 years or your entire lifetime. We don't see that. The average person is going to probably have 5 to 7 careers once they graduate from school under this environment. There's no logical reason to tie that to an employer. And that's why some of the plans call for individual coverage that you are responsible for yourself, that offer access to this pool that we're talking about so that you get the best rates for it. But then you can take that coverage with you anywhere you go to any employer that you go to.
So the difference then is actually, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of difference in what you're talking about with Roger here. Then,
no, I think it's a matter of schematics and how it's delivered. And you know, if we can find a way that the government can deliver it better than private enterprise can, I'm all for that. I think what all of us, especially as small employers like Wayne and I are, we're looking for any kind of solution that will help us be able to offer our employees health benefits, because it's becoming near to impossible for us to do that and survive in a business.
Our research has shown that employers will live with pretty much a 15% cost increase. I mean, how ridiculous is that? If we have to look at only a 15% cost increase... And that's another caller, I think, to argue universal health care on Dean's private line there. You know, but the wild card in this is we want to be the first to agree that we don't think this is the answer to it all. I mean, one of the other issues is that the limit of consumerism and its ability to impact expenses in health care, and I'll cite a stat that roughly 2.5% of all individuals spend more than $40,000 a year in health care, and that's 50% of our health care costs. So consumerism is just a small piece of the puzzle, and I'm really uncomfortable at this point arguing the concept of it being a right or a privilege. All we're saying is that as business people, we're seeing some trends. We think this trend is positive, and we're going to see a lot more of it before we see less of it.
We'll give thanks, Roger. Jared in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Jared. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to touch on something. You talked about leveling the playing field for the consumer, and there's a problem that exists that I've experienced that nobody seems to talk about, and that is that everybody in the healthcare system obfuscates the cost that I will have to pay eventually. For example, I had a cataract for years, and I had a $5,000 deductible plan from Humana, mostly because I wanted to cover catastrophic events. And so I thought, well, I'll try and find out how much it's going to cost about 3 years ago, and I called up Humana. And I said, so I'm going to use one of your providers, so can you do have the amount that they would charge me? And they said, yeah, we got it. And I said, so how much is it? And they said, well, we can't tell you. That's proprietary. Now, what if I went to go and buy a car, and the car dealer said, well, we can't tell you how much it's going to be. We'll just take it out of your account when you agree to buy it.
That's a great point. Well, transparency is going to be an outcome of consumerism, because as consumers are responsible, we're going to demand to know what things cost. And very often, providers don't have a clue what it costs. They're just not set up to track, measure, manage, and quote procedures like they're going to be. But we're seeing that coming about. Transparency is going to be a term you're going to hear a lot of in the next several years.
Well, I hope so. Later on, I did have the cataract surgery last year. I went on Medicare, and the doctor gave me two prescriptions that I was supposed to start taking drops before I had the surgery. So I went to my drugstore locally, and I said, how much are these going to cost? And they said the same thing. You have to buy them. We can't tell you. So the guy agreed. He said, I will charge you for them. I'll put them on your account, and then I'll just take them off. He had to go through that rigmarole to be able to find out. And then I went across the street, and I did find out it was a different price across the street at a different drugstore. It wasn't a big price, but it was a different price. So yeah. It took me like an hour and a half to do this shopping, which should have been a very easy thing. If I want to buy a tube of toothpaste, I can easily see what the price is.
Yeah.
So something has to be done about that. The president and the administration can't go on saying, oh, we want you to be good consumers and have these health care savings plans so you'll know, you know, you'll spend your money wisely. You can't spend your money wisely. It's impossible.
Yeah. Good points. Dean?
Well, and the interesting part is, as was noted, you know, kind of earlier, it is in any other industry, you could not get away with exactly what you're talking about. And this is the best example of what the third-party payer system has resulted in for us in healthcare in this country. And it's resulted in a lot of issues. It resulted in issues of overcapacity. We note in the book that we believe that if you look at our healthcare capacity in many of our areas, and including, you know, local communities here in Wisconsin, we have more capacity than we have true need. We have duplication of facilities. We have duplication of equipment. And for a while, the discussion in that was competition is good and competition will work this out. Well, that's true under a normal consumerism environment. Under a third-party payer environment, providers can fill that capacity because the person using the service isn't paying for it. Now what we're facing is the ramifications of that. And one of those ramifications is the fact that nobody paid the same price for anything. There was not a price. So now what you're seeing are new ventures popping up. We talk in the book about one that's starting out of southeastern Wisconsin called comparabill.com, which will allow you to go onto a website to put in some basic treatment needs or care needs, and it will bring up a comparison for you that will look at price, it will look at quality, and it'll look at patient satisfaction. So, you know, we're actually creating demand for some of these new needs. And as Wayne said, transparency is going to be a huge issue in the next 2 to 5 years, especially.
And one of the issues that you talk about, or one of the things you talk about in the book, is the role of retail establishments in this whole process. And that was an interesting one for me. Places like Walgreens or Walmart getting involved. Talk a little about that.
Well, Walmart is probably the most interesting one, and it was after we had already put out the book, but a contact of ours had access to notes from an analyst meeting that the CEO of Walmart did in New York. And in that meeting, he indicated that Walmart will do to healthcare what they did to retail. And interestingly enough, the plan may be starting to lay itself out. If you followed this over the last 2 years, Walmart initially announced that they were piloting retail clinics in some of their Walmart stores. They did this with about 400 stores initially. About 6 months later, they announced that it was going to roll out to 1,900 stores and that they were going to become a major player in the category. They've most recently announced now that they have ended what had been traditionally a policy of just renting out that space, so to speak, and are now going to launch 400 clinics under their own brand name. And they're doing that in partnership with local providers, and they're signing 5-year agreements with them. Our belief is that after those agreements are up, they may waive the renewal, and they may move into the industry on their own. Healthcare sees an opportunity. There's over $1 billion already in health savings accounts in this country. And part of what we talk about in the book is everybody scrambling to figure out how they get their piece of this pie, which is growing exponentially right now as more and more employers move to these high deductible plans.
And as you even talked about banks, the fact that banks originally didn't think too much of it and didn't pay much attention to it, but then some research showed, I believe, that people weren't really drawing that money down very fast like you would a checking account, but were hanging on to it, which meant that banks were kind of losing out a little bit maybe.
Yeah, originally, banks thought these types of accounts would just be transactional, and banks don't need more checking accounts. They want money to stay there so they can make use of it and make money on it. And we're finding that a lot of consumers are holding onto their dollars. They are staying in their accounts, and banks are getting very interested. We had a very prominent insurance company tell us that if an insurance company doesn't have a bank charter, they're not going to be able to compete. So we're going to see banks becoming insurance companies, and banks merging.
You have United Healthcare right now has a national bank charter, and Blue Cross Blue Shield on the national level. Both have national bank charters. And so you will see the insurers coming into the banking arena. The banks are already in the insurance arena, and the healthcare providers are getting kind of squeezed a little bit in the middle.
And we're going to go to Walmart for our healthcare.
Well, as you look at health savings accounts, and I think it was maybe Dean that mentioned earlier that it's really the younger people who are in the best position maybe to take advantage of this, and they are taking advantage of it. When all this change comes, I can see, let's say those HSAs, health savings accounts, work. Well, they were going to work really well for younger people, but what about the baby boomers who are now coming through? What happens to those people or people like them?
Well, actually, a couple of things. Actually, the health savings accounts are becoming more attractive to everyone just because of some of the tax rules. We're actually putting some seminars together that one of the target groups we're bringing in is we're going to have an accountant do a presentation because there's some tax benefits and some savings ramifications to it that make it attractive for a larger group. And actually, it's not just the younger people. The higher income groups are jumping on it as well because of some of those tax benefits. But it does create that polarity that we talked about before, that you get into a situation where, unfortunately, We've got kind of a have and have not group. We've got a young, healthy group on one side of the equation in the high deductible plans, and we have the older and less healthy group staying under the traditional plans, and that's where we're going to have to make some changes, or else the cost for that remaining group are just going to skyrocket.
And what kinds of changes could you foresee then? How can we smooth all this out? How does this all get smoothed out?
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, if I had a solution in the book, we'd probably be very, very rich and we wouldn't be talking with you. But, you know, I think what's going to happen here is as we spend more of our money ourselves and we start to realize that the cost of not being healthy is not just our physical future, it's our financial future, that in and of itself will make some changes in the way we behave, the way we act, the way we use services. That's a positive. Along with that, I think what has to happen is we're going to need some changes in the insurance system. We're going to need some changes in the way the government interacts with those systems to help us level the playing field so that we don't get this polarity between the very healthy, wealthy group and the very unhealthy, not wealthy group. And I think that will tend to work itself out in the future. But there's no obvious solution on the horizon, and we're not seeing anything in any of the plans that the political candidates are offering that really is a solution. They're all kind of migrations towards a different movement.
But as you point out in your book, this change is going to happen whether we're ready for it or not. Where do you, you know, how much time have we got here?
I don't see us having much more in about 10 to 15 years, which is kind of the scary part because, as you know, anything that involves major industry or government doesn't change quickly. And yet we're on a course here where the train is going to go off the cliff. We're doing some things that I think will slow the train down, but I have not seen anything that's going to stop that from happening. So something significant will have to happen in the next 10 years in order for this not to create an economic train wreck in this country.
Well, we haven't talked about a lot of things. Doctor-patient relationships, that was one thing that I found very interesting in the book, and more about the government's role and more about the consumer role and retail role as well. But I guess we'll have to leave that for another time. Thanks, guys, very much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Dean Halvorsen, CEO of the LEAD Research Group in Manitowoc, one of our guests. The other, Wayne Glowack, CEO of Glowack & Harris, advertising agency in Madison, and they are co-authors of the book Healthcare Tsunami, The Wave of Consumerism That Will Change U.S. Business. Interesting topics, and always when we talk about healthcare, there's plenty of people who want to join in with their comments, and I thank everybody for their calls. There's obviously a lot of interest, and we'll be dealing with it again in the future. But coming up, we're going to be dealing with something else. Well, maybe staying healthy with canoeing and kayaking. That's one way to stay healthy and to keep healthy is through canoeing and kayaking and outdoor adventuring. And we'll talk about that coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.